One additional note before we get started is I do note that we do have a few visiting scholars on this call. We welcome you for joining, but want to just let you know that this call is and this webinar session is actually geared to the U.S. institutions that would be applying to host you, so just keep that in mind. Additionally, I did note on the registration form that 90% of you attending, this would be your first time hosting, so we're very excited to know that. All right, so diving in. The Fulbright Program was established in 1946, and its goal was really to serve as a public diplomacy initiative. So the goal of it was to strengthen the relationships between the people of the United States and the rest of the world. As we have David on the line, it's important for us to always note that this program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. David can go into that a little bit more in detail if you have any questions, but it is administered by the Institute of International Education, and we're very excited about this partnership. This slide oftentimes gets overlooked, but I really think it shows the true breadth of the program, showing one of the first scholars to Burma on the left, and on the right you see a newer initiative that we launched about, I think, 3 to 4 years ago, which was the Fulbright Arctic Initiative. So the program is always changing, and it's just very exciting to get involved however you can. And with that, I will temporarily pass the reins over to David, who will talk about the OLAF program objectives and then go into a couple other slides about benefits.
Sarah, thank you very much. So as this slide shows you, I think this is really straightforward. The idea is to bring visiting Fulbright scholars who are here all over the United States, primarily doing research. There are about 800 to 900 of them throughout the year. The idea is to bring them to other campuses for short visits to both help you as an institution internationalize, but also help them as visiting scholars interact with other kinds of institutions and see other parts of the United States. So it's pretty straightforward as to what the objective is. And then the next slide, Sarah, if we can do that, talks about the benefits. First of all, to you as an institution, and I mentioned that the basic idea of this is to help you internationalize your campus, your curriculum, your community, by bringing the visiting scholar to your campus for a short visit. We talk about 2 to 6 days to engage with you and your students and your staff and faculty as you see fit. So it's helping you internationalize, but it's also helping it's helping you get a better sense of the Fulbright program. And you'll see in later slides, we talk about priority given to institutions that are traditionally underserved in terms of Fulbright and or those institutions that serve minority audiences. So the idea is, and Sarah mentioned that many of you are look like you're new to OLF or maybe even new to Fulbright. The idea is, how do we bring the scholar to campus for you to benefit from them being there, but also at the same time letting that scholar open up the world of Fulbright to you and to your institution. And the next slide, Sarah. Talk about benefits to the scholar as well. As I said, we want them to have the opportunity to do some traveling across the United States and to visit places they might not otherwise get to and perhaps experience institutions that they might not otherwise experience, the kinds of schools that we're reaching out to with this program. So this might mean that the Fulbrighter who's here from Argentina, who is doing research at Yale, might visit a community college in Oklahoma, or the scholar who's here doing research in chemistry at University of Wisconsin might go to a community college in Florida, or a historic black college in Texas. So it's the idea that you're benefiting from them being there, but also them benefiting from having the experience of meeting with you and with your institution and getting a broader sense of not only another part of the country and another location, but also a better sense of the the breadth of American higher education. So we think it's really sort of a win-win both for you and for the scholars who participate. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, David, for that overview. Wonderful. Thanks, David. All right. So moving on, one of the main questions we always get for people joining this webinar is, what is the application process? So many years back, we actually did switch this application to be institutionally driven. So that's why this webinar is geared for institutions, as David was saying. So institutions actually apply on behalf of the scholar. Keep in mind, these scholars are already here on their grant, as David pointed out. So they're here in the United States. There's a list of them, which I will show you shortly, that you can go through and find the right one that kind of fits either your department or your institution as a whole. We do encourage all hosts to consider partnering with another institution. It definitely adds to the experience for the scholar to experience multiple institutions. As David was saying, a few examples. We've seen some go to large research institutions, but they also will have a lecture at the local community college. They might actually go down the road and have a cultural lecture at a local K-12 school. So we encourage you to get as creative as you can within your community and really think of creative applications to submit for this program. Moving forward, as David mentioned, we do require that all applications include at least one visit to a priority institution. We do have a working list online of what constitutes as a priority institution, but for the most part, it's what you see below on the screen. Those are your minority-serving institutions, community colleges, small liberal arts colleges, geographically underrepresented institutions, women's colleges, arts institutions, and other types of rural institutions. Again, we always love to say yes to any application, but we might just ask for you to tweak it a little bit so we ensure that we are meeting the program eligibility. If you are a scholar on this call, we always make sure to let you know that unfortunately this program is for lecturing at U.S. higher education institutions and cannot be used for conferences or meetings. If you have any questions, please reach out. Be happy to work with you and see if we can fine-tune that. Moving right along to eligibility, the host institutions, as we said, must be accredited U.S. colleges or universities, and they should be located at least 75 miles away from the scholar's U.S. host institution. So David gave a few examples. You'll see this if you're in Texas and you're trying to get a scholar that's located on, say, the East Coast, maybe in New York or Virginia. There are examples of maybe an institution in San Diego requesting a scholar from San Francisco. That is more than 75 miles, that is eligible. But really, what we're looking for is to show these scholars another part of the United States. So that's really why that rule is listed in this eligibility requirement. Additionally, we ask that institutions cover lodging, local transportation, meals, and incidentals. There's an asterisk on this one because we are aware that some institutions do not have the funding. We don't want that to be a roadblock for you and prevent you from applying. So supplemental funding can be available upon request. So what we would ask is an application for you to indicate that, and you would also indicate that in your official invitation letter. So once we see that you're making that request, we'll kind of do a case-by-case judgment. So do not let that last kind of bullet point hinder you in your decision to apply. In terms of eligibility for the Fulbright Scholar, they must be a current Fulbright Visiting Scholar grantee in the United States. Oftentimes we'll get an application, but they're actually looking to apply for a visiting student. So just make sure that the scholar that you're wishing to apply actually appears on our website in the scholar directory. And I will, again, as I said, I'll get to that part of the website momentarily. Additionally, these scholars have to be on grants longer than 3 months. This is because if it's shorter than 3 months, it doesn't allow enough time for the application to be received, reviewed, for the scholar to go on their grant and get paid. So we really are looking for scholars on 3 months or more. So just take a look at their grant dates before you do submit. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask. Lastly, This scholar must possess a U.S. Social Security number and a U.S. bank account. In the past, these scholars would send us their Social Security number and their bank details. Moving forward, they actually register it through IIE Pay, which is through Zelle. There's more information online about that process, but just so you know, they still have to have these two pieces, but they no longer have to send the actual bank details to us directly. Moving forward, I did mention briefly the part of cost share. As I said, supplemental funding is available, but this slide just really kind of breaks down which party is providing what. So when you're applying for an OLF, it is that travel grant. So we're here to provide that airfare and the transportation to and from the airport. And we ask for you as the institution to provide all or some of the following, being the local transportation, the lodging, and the meals. If you can't do that, again, please reach out to us. Let's see what we can do to kind of work around that. We like to say this process is fairly simple. I hope it's simple for you all. We will have changes coming in the spring, which I'll talk about momentarily, but it's pretty easy to find a scholar that you want to host. And again, the directory is forthcoming. But first off, you need to identify the scholar you want to invite. You'll do that through the scholar directory, or perhaps you've met them at an international conference or another local conference and you're interested in inviting them. So all you have to do is make sure you identify the scholar that suits your institution's needs or your department's needs. Next, you'll contact the scholar either through their faculty associate, or you can email me directly with their name and a short blurb of about like the dates and what you're hoping to invite them to lecture on. I will take that information and actually forward it directly to the scholar. Unfortunately, we cannot give you their emails directly due to privacy concerns, but we will make sure to do everything in our power to actually connect you with the scholar that you are interested in. After that, you will just download the application form from our website and fill it out with the information that you have confirmed with the scholar, and submit that to us with that invitation letter. And from there, we try to approve every single one of them. So with that, just give me one second. I'm actually going to go to the website and finally show you the directory that I was promising you. Okay. Here we go. You should now be seeing our website. So this is the homepage, cis.org. Under this first rotating photo, you'll see the third kind of box here highlighted orange. It says View the Fulbright Scholar Directory. In this directory, you'll want to make sure that you're using the filters appropriately just so you're not getting thousands of pages of results. So the first two that I'm going to point out, you should always select. So you're always going to want to select non-U.S. parentheses visiting scholars, so you're not getting the U.S. scholars from your institutions going abroad. And then you'll want to select the academic year. So the current academic year we are in is 2018-2019. From there, you can filter by a discipline of the scholar. Please keep in mind this is not an exhaustive list. These are just the most common ones that have been utilized in the application. And you could also filter by the world area, or if you actually knew of the country you wish to have a scholar from, you can fill it out there. So for this example, we're going to go to the United Kingdom, and I just want to see how many scholars are there. So for 18-19, it looks like we have two pages of scholars. Each of their names are hyperlinks, so you can actually click on them to find out what their actual research is here in the United States at their host institution, and you can see basic details on this homepage. So I'm actually going to go into Michael David's file. He's from the United Kingdom. His discipline is anthropology, and he was from the University of Cambridge. He's currently studying or researching at the University of South Florida. So when you click on their name, you'll kind of get a brief profile of who this person is. The first part said scholar information, that's basically what you saw on that homepage, everything about the scholar, what they're doing. If you move to the right, it's information on their host institution here in the United States. As I mentioned before, when you're trying to connect with the scholars, we said you can reach out to their faculty associate. that is listed right here. So Dr. David Himmelgreen is their faculty associate. You can actually search them on their school website and try and reach out and see if their scholar would be interested in coming to your institution. Lastly, which is also probably the most important part, is their grant information. As I said, the scholar cannot lecture in the last month of their grant, and they have to be on a grant of 3 months or longer. So this scholar is in the United States from August 2018 to August 2019, so they definitely meet the 3 month requirement. So you just want to make sure you're not requesting them to lecture probably the end of July through August. And then, as I said, you might be interested in their projectile to see, okay, well, anthropology suits our needs. Does their title, is it appropriate for what we're looking for? So as you can see, he's doing some research on the Zika virus. As we go back, I'll show you one last way to filter for this program. And say you didn't want to filter by program country, you were curious to filter based on their project title, you can actually do that in this section that says project. So we're just going to base it off of that last one by putting, I spelled that wrong, I'm sorry everyone. So we'll try Zika and see what we get. And as you can see, Michael David pops up again. So both of these scholars actually have the word Zika in their project title. So that's another way to kind of get a more nuanced search. David, do you have any thoughts at the moment?
No, I think it's a pretty straightforward process, we hope.
We do hope, and let us know if it's not, and we'll be happy to help. So going off of this, I want to kind of stay on the website for a moment, just walk you through a couple other areas of interest. Under programs, if you go to U.S. Institution, that's where you'll find the Outreach Lecturing Fund website. You can also type in cis.org/OLF, and it will take you directly here. So on this website, this is all the information you could want, and these are in the next few slides, but I'd rather show it to you in live time. If you're curious if you are a priority institution, you would actually click this hyperlink. I believe it's in multiple places on this site, and you can download it. The list, when you download it, looks like this one shown on the screen. So it's an exhaustive list, but it's not... it's comprehensive, but it's not exhaustive, is what I should say. So this is a list that scholars often use when they're trying to find an institution and reach out on their part. But if you're curious, if you meet any of those criteria, such as a minority-serving institution or community college, feel free to look here. If you feel there's a discrepancy, please reach out to me. I'm happy to try and fix any issues that you come about. All right, so we'll move back to the website. So the first tab is the overview, the second is the eligibility that we did discuss, and the third is probably the most important for you, and that's the application tab. So when you do open it, it should probably have both of these sections minimized, but if you're looking to host a scholar from October 1st through September 30th, you'll actually select this first one. You can download the application form and fill it out. Let's see if I can pull that one back up. I'll give you a quick shot of it. That's right here. There we go. And this is what you would most likely see when you do download that. So the first page is just instructions walking you through it step by step. The second page is divided into two sections. The first section is information about the scholar. So you'll put their name, where they're from, their grant end date. Most of this information you will ask from the scholar once you're in touch with them, just to make sure you're inputting it correctly. And what's key is to input the closest airport to them, because that's how we base the awards. The second part on that page is funding information. As I said, if you need supplemental funding, this is where you will include that. The first question is asking if you're able to provide housing, yes or no. If it's no, please email us that you are requesting for supplemental funding. The second part is the honorarium. I'll get into that a little bit later. It is not required, but we just need to know if you are providing it. The last page is everything about the hosting proposal. So So there's three sections. If you need to duplicate this page and add more, we've seen it done. I've seen up to 9 lectures by one scholar on one trip. So please consider doing that. But this is where you'll tell us the lecture title and the institutions that they are visiting. If they're doing the same lecture on your campus just multiple times, you don't need to include it every time. But say they're doing one on their research and one on a cultural, another topic maybe pertaining to the research or another cultural topic, please list each of them because we want to make sure that we are tracking that and fill out things appropriately. If you are partnering and they're only doing 2 lectures, one on each campus, you'll fill out a section for each institution they are visiting. So this just helps us in approving your application. All right. The last 2 tabs are timeline. I'll get into this a little bit more, but it's a rolling deadline. There's no hard and fast deadline. We just ask that you submit it at least a month before, so we make sure we have time, enough time to approve it and enough time for you to publicize it on your campus. And then the last tab is our FAQ section. So if you have any questions, check here. If this doesn't answer it, please feel free to email me. All right, let's go back to the PowerPoint. Hold on. There we go. So this next tab was just a snapshot of the online website, which we went through. So moving back into how to apply for the program, you will fill out that application form that I did show you, and you will also produce a letter of invitation on university or college letterhead. That essentially is just taking what you put in the application and putting it more in paragraph form, letting us know when you expect the scholars to travel, the lectures you expect them to do, or anything that you are providing them. So if you're providing housing, providing meals or any type of cultural engagement, please list it there. We just want to know exactly the extent of their involvement on this trip. Additionally, we ask, as I mentioned before, that they are not lecturing in the last month of their grant period, and that these lectures tend to be 2 to 6 days in length. We've seen shorter, we've seen longer, so it's really up to you the amount of time and agreeing with the scholar that they can actually take that time to come to your campus. Keep in mind they're here on their Fulbright conducting research or lecturing, so they do have some responsibilities back at their home campus, so just keep that in mind when you're planning these events. Once you have finished these components, you'll actually email everything to olf@iie.org at least 30 days before, and we try to approve them within a week or less. And I want to put a little asterisk here just for you to be aware. We are hoping to have a new application system come spring, and once we have that, we will be sending out a webinar meeting to kind of walk you through that new system. But we have an excellent team currently working on transitioning us from that PDF to hopefully an online application. Moving on back to this process is once we review your application, we will actually compose an email with the award amount. It will be sent to you directly, and we will copy the scholar on it. Once the scholar gets that email with the amount, they can go ahead and purchase their ticket or arrange other transportation for the trip. We ask that they don't purchase it until they have that amount. So keep that in the back of your mind. And lastly, as I said, we try and respond within a week or less, so please give us at least a week to respond to the application. And we do ask that you try not to submit it multiple times unless there's edits, because it does slow down our processing time to go through multiple applications. All right, so the last thing I think that you might be interested in, I went over this a bit, is what should your invitation letter say? As I mentioned, it's really taking the application and just putting it within this letter. It's the purpose of the visit to your institution. What type of activities will the scholar be involved in? Will they be going part of a homestay? Will they be having dinner or lunch with provosts or deans or the faculty department? Will you be doing anything extracurricular? Just let us know. If you are providing an honorarium, please list it here because that's important for us to get approval for that. But again, please note it is not a requirement. Just some institutions choose to offer it. And then lastly, if you are collaborating with another institution, please list that here so we just know exactly where the scholar is going. After the visit is over, we have a few requirements just to kind of finish up our housekeeping. We do require the host to submit an evaluation of the event, one for every campus visited. So in that, if the scholar is visiting Austin Community College and University of Texas, both institutions will actually submit an evaluation. In that, you can list, if they do more than one lecture, please list that all in one. But we do ask that each partnering institution submit this evaluation for our records. And the other thing that we ask of hosts is we always like to blog and promote this program. It's such a great program. We want other people to know about it. If you have feel that your program went off without a hitch and that you have good advice, please consider writing up a post about it that we can potentially turn into a blog post and kind of send throughout our networks. We would love to really highlight your institution. Additionally, if you would rather not do that and your school's kind of campus put together a news piece or article, please feel free to share that with us. We can also publicize it that way. For the scholars who are listening and for the hosts that are interested, for them, we have a few more housekeeping items. They need to register for IIE Pay so they can get paid. If they have any questions about this, they should go to their program advisor who will make sure that they are set up. They also need to submit their Social Security number to the Scholar Portal. They do not need to email us any of that directly just due to privacy concerns, so please don't have them email us that documentation. They are also welcome to submit photos and scholar stories, so we definitely encourage you if you have a great department that or students that are interested in photography, maybe see if they'd be willing to take photos throughout the event because it's always good to publicize what you are doing and how you're internationalizing your campus. This slide actually has been popular over the last few years because I feel a lot of people want to see past examples. And so we divide it into two different areas, the culturally focused lectures as well as the research focused lectures. So you can really see the breadth that these scholars bring from talking about the refugee crisis to Brexit to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And then on the other side, with more culturally focused that didn't necessarily pertain to their research, we've had scholars talk about elections within their countries. We've had scholars who are dancers put on workshops for dance classes, and they actually submitted a lovely video of them going to a local kindergarten and teaching, or elementary school, I should say, and teaching them how to dance. David, I actually want to bring you back in and see if you have any other kind of thoughts over your experience of good examples that you have seen institutions put forth.
Yeah, we've seen some really creative ideas. I remember school in Wisconsin, or a community college, was looking at sort of developing some business relationships with Thailand. So it so happened that there was a scholar here from Thailand in business, so they brought that scholar to campus through OLF and was there for 3 or 4 days, kept up communication, and then the end result was that Wisconsin and Thailand developed a partnership through their respective chambers of commerce. So neat examples as to what schools have done. We've seen some good partnerships with local museums. So they've featured that scholar as a lecturer, not only, let's say, to the K-12 school, but thought, are there even broader ways we might be able to feature this scholar within the community? And the museum turned out to be a very good host. So we, you know, encourage you to think creatively about how you could utilize this scholar, how you could promote the fact that they're there, how you could enable them to interact with broader audiences. The K-12 schools clearly are great examples, and we see, you know, the students clearly benefit from meeting a scholar from another country, and the scholars like to do that as well. So think creatively about how you can utilize these scholars. And if you notice the priority schools that we're talking about reaching, they're often schools that may have less exposure to Fulbrighters or to scholars from other countries. So we've done this purposely for you to really take advantage of what Fulbright has to offer.
Thank you so much, David. And so with that, you have reached the end of the meat of this, and we will actually transition into the question and answer portion. We've had a few people submit questions, and David and I will answer them as best we can. But while we're going through those, please feel free to submit more. If you have any questions, my email is on this page, olaf@iie.org. And as you can see, we're on many different social media platforms, so we are very eager to really promote this program. And before I get into the questions, I wanted to just promote another program, which I'm sure Dave will be happy to chime in on. But we've seen many hosts in the past, especially with you all being new to this program, transition from hosting OLAF to transitioning to the Scholar in Residence program. As a quick note, that program actually, for the upcoming academic year, closed this past Monday, but it always has a deadline of October 15th, so the next deadline will be October 15th, 2019. It's never too early to start. I believe that's for hosting a scholar for the 2021 academic year. It's a little more robust than this program, so you're actually putting together an institutional application to host a scholar for either a semester or a full academic year to teach a full undergraduate course load. So we always want to kind of really have that resonate with you, that you know, you start with OLAF and let's see if you can grow. I would love to see more people get interested in this other program. David, do you have any other thoughts on that before we move to questions?
Just to say that OLAF is a good feeder for the larger program. Lots of schools who maybe never have hosted before say, let's try this with OLAF. We bring a scholar to campus for 3 or 4 days. We like this experience. And then think about how might you bring a scholar to campus for a semester or a year. And that would be then, as Sarah said, the Scholar in Residence program.
Perfect. And the application should open next spring. So just keep an eye out. Feel free to either email myself at OLAF, or you can also email me at sar@iie.org. I'm happy to give you any information as you get more interested in both OLAF and SAR. And with that, we will transition to the question portion. The first question is, someone noticed that there are 2 to 3 Fulbright scholars in the area in their area on the list. With that, if they're under 75 miles, I would say you're still welcome to invite them, but because they're a little closer, it wouldn't be through the Outreach Lecturing Fund, but we'd still be happy to hear about ways that you are engaging with local scholars, and they're always eager to hear from you. So if you have any questions about how to connect with them, feel free to let me know. Is it recommended to identify only one scholar, or is it helpful to identify a few to increase opportunities for a match? I do apologize. I did not actually touch on this, which was the first time I haven't. We allow institutions to host 2 scholars a semester. So you could host 2 scholars in the fall, 2 scholars in the spring, 2 scholars in the summer. Yes, we do allow for summer. Again, it's an ongoing program. If you want to host more than that, we will let you, but you'd have to partner with other local institutions. So there's a little caveat there. Let's see. In the initial email about the program, there was an Excel list. Can we still use that Excel list? That Excel list was a temporary hold for the Scholar Directory going live on October 1st. The information is not incorrect, it's just not as complete as the Scholar Directory is. So you might be missing some scholars that have since completed their grant form. So I would encourage you to yield on the side of caution and use the Scholar Directory, as it is updated a couple times a month to incorporate new scholars that are signing off on their documentation or come later in the semester. We do have a lot of scholars that start their grant in the spring, so we don't want you to forget about them. Let's see. What is the successful rate of an application, and how many grants or recipients per batch? David, would you like to tell them about this?
Sure. So, by and large, we think the success rate is 100% if you're saying success meaning applying to host an OLF and getting one. And we try to include any institution that's interested in doing that, as long as they met the criteria that Sarah talked about in terms of accreditation and so forth, and also the timing factors. You know, it does not have a finite, it doesn't have an infinite budget, so we look just to spread this out as best as we can. But having said that, there clearly are a number of schools that host multiple OLFs in a given year. So we think that works. Scholars often say to us, you know, can I initiate this myself? And as Sarah said, there's nothing wrong with a scholar reaching out to a given campus if they've got an idea that they're to visit that campus, and that's fine. And scholars will often do that in advance. But the actual application that we're accepting needs to come from the potential host institution themselves rather than from that scholar.
Perfect. Thank you so much, David. We have another question. What is the next season for the application? There is no true season to this application. It runs year-round. Each application launch technically happens on the 1st of October, and so it just runs for a full year, but that's very internal on our end. You can submit at any time. We just ask that you submit a month before the grant date. We do have a question of how the scholar would take the initiative to apply for the OLF. David did touch on that, but just to feed off of it, you can reach out to your program advisor. You can utilize that priority institution list to reach out to institutions and just see if they'd be willing to host you. It does happen. It's not you're not alone in this, but we do try and kind of steer towards the institutions, encouraging them to be the want to take the lead and make sure that they are applying, because we want to ensure that it's beneficial to both the scholar as well as the institution. I'm very excited about this. We have someone who's planning an event in March and April, and they've had scholars in the past. And is there a way to narrow down the list based on scholars with end dates? Because they're getting a lot of people at the end dates of December 2018. I'm happy to walk you through this one-on-one if you want to call. But if you go through that scholar directory, you can actually put the dates that you're interested in looking for. So you can actually list scholars in country from, say, March through July, and that should hopefully get rid of those scholars that have the grant end date of December 2018, but we are really looking forward to your event next spring. Awesome. We'll let a few more questions roll in. If you have any, please feel free to submit them. David, can you think of any other advice that we might have missed?
Just a couple points. So part of the idea of the fact that we're inviting institutions to apply rather than scholars is because, as I said, we want this program to be beneficial to you and your institution. And the idea is not only that you're inviting the scholar to campus, but we also want to hopefully sort of introduce you to the world of Fulbright, if that's not something that you're already familiar with, and to realize that, in fact, hey, this was a great experience. We could, in fact, be sending our students or our faculty to the country, for example, where our OLF scholars coming from. Fulbright operates between the United States and more than 160 countries around the world. So you could be sending your students as Fulbright students abroad for an academic year to study, to do research, to serve as an English teaching assistant. These are post-baccalaureate students. You could be sending your own faculty on Fulbright's to lecture, to conduct research, to consult, again, in multiple countries around the world. So, yes, you're bringing this visiting scholar to your campus as part of the OLF, but hopefully this introduces you to the broader world of Fulbright and for you to realize that there are other ways for you to become engaged with the program itself.
I don't think I could have said that any better, so thanks so much, David. It looks like our attendees have run out of questions. As I said, my email is on this page. It's all over the website. So please, please feel free to reach out with any questions. I'm happy to set up a time to talk through anything, any advice that you have with the application process. We hope to see all of you apply this upcoming year. We're always eager to get new institutions involved in this wonderful program. We always say it is the lowest hanging fruit. It's so easy, so please, please consider applying. And as soon as this session is over, we will start to convert that recording and get it. It should be online within 2 to 3 business days, but as soon as it's online, I will send an email to everyone who registered for this. So you'll get it straight to your inbox. You don't have to wait for it to come online to the website. But in the meantime, happy searching that directory and finding scholars that actually meet your campus's needs. And thank you also to David for taking the time to be on this call.
A pleasure. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
All right. We'll hopefully speak with you soon. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.